license endorsements to optometrists who desire to use approved drugs. If the licensee can prove to the board 200 hours of didactic instruction, training, or supervised experience given at an accredited school or college in optometry course, and proof of having passed written practical examinations. Required subjects are general and ocular pharmacology, ocular pathology, and differential diagnosis, and treatment of pathology of the eye and its admixa, including the use of legend drugs. License endorsement expires with the license, but may be renewed or approved to continue education. The drugs approved for the use of optometrists are limited to cyclopegics used to inactivate the airplane focusing mechanism of the eye, and mydriatics, I think it's psychiatrics, used to dilate the pupil to improve the view of the cornea. Disciplinary sanctions will be imposed by the board of care to refer a patient for treatment beyond the scope of the optometrist license and for the use of drugs in violation of the statute. The committee has a quorum present consisting of Paul Fisher, Senator Keenan Vinsler, and Rick Alford from the Chubiak Eagle River area, and myself. Representative Myla Fritz, who is the former co-chairman of the House Hess Committee and himself a physician, will be recognized to testify at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Milo Fritz. I happen to be an MD, and I'm a representative from District 5. And I'm very much opposed to the passage of this pernicious piece of legislation for reasons that I will try to boil down to the very essence. The essence of what I have to say, Mr. Chairman, especially since you're an attorney, is that we have on the books of this state, representing the people of the state, the Medical Practice Act, which says that in order to practice medicine, one has to be the graduate of a medical school, have an MD degree, pass an examination, and be licensed by the state either through that examination or by reciprocity in order to practice. In this bill, you are extending the right, or whoever are extending the right, to unqualified people to practice medicine because using medications in the eyes or on inside the eyelids or on the outside of the eyelids is practicing medicine. And I would say and respectfully suggest this ought to go to your Judiciary Committee for that reason alone. This bill is an example of the worst kind of special interest legislation. The purpose is not to make things better for the people of Alaska, but to allow optometrists to practice medicine. Up to this time, the practice of medicine, which includes the writing of prescriptions and the use of drugs, among which, of course, are eye drops, has been properly restricted by the will of the people through the Medical Practice Act. Those who have graduated from a Class A medical school, who have received an MD degree, and who have passed an examination or been licensed by reciprocity to practice medicine in the state of Alaska. By permitting optometrists to use drugs, one is in effect saying that people who wish to practice medicine, including the prescribing of drugs, are so dumb that they have to fulfill the above-mentioned qualifications for the MDs, or optometrists are so smart they don't need to comply with the regulations of the Medical Practice Act. Up to the present time, optometrists have been able to employ their services for the good of Alaskans all over the state quite satisfactorily, without invading the practice of medicine. Therefore, there is no reason at all for them to be using drugs as they wish to, without complying with the regulations of the Medical Practice Act. Optometrists go out into the bush and are able to extend the services for supplying eyeglasses and contact lenses to people in remote areas without the use of drugs. There is no reason why they should be allowed to practice medicine only because they wish to and not because it is going to do any good for the people in the remote areas. In the Bethel area, it is my understanding, there are at least two optometrists who do itinerant optometry in the small villages. When a problem arises for which drugs might be necessary, the optometrist in question call the MD in charge of their activities back in the Bethel Hospital, and they then are permitted or urged to use certain medications or have the patient brought in for more definitive care. The MD supervisor, who ultimately is responsible for the good or bad results of what is done, is a proper delineation of authority. Allowing optometrists after a crash course in diseases of the eye to diagnose and treat disease is like allowing a 200-hour light plane pilot to assume the command of a 747 jet. It also may be like letting a law clerk who is more or less specialized in one aspect of the law to practice the law without passing a bar examination, graduating from a law school, or obtaining a Bachelor of Law degree or one more advanced. This bill attempts to do by legislation, Mr. Chairman, what optometrists should be required to do by education and licensure, as I have and all other MDs. Such a subversive effort to circumvent the Medical Practice Act should be thwarted by the overwhelming defeat, in my opinion, of this piece of legislation. There is no indication that anybody is going to do without eyeglasses or contact lenses who require them under the present system of care, either by MDs or by optometrists. Therefore, there is no reason why the sphere of optometrists should be increased by allowing them to practice medicine. An examination of the bill shows the ignorance of optometrists regarding the practice of medicine to shine through. On page 5, line 22 through 28, they speak of being denied the use of, and I quote, of inflammations, end quote, which, of course, is a meaningless phrase, since inflammations are not induced for the cure of any eye disease, although this was once the case 40 years ago under certain situations. The use of cycloplegics and midriatics is not without its dangers, and when there are untoward reactions, optometrists certainly are not in any position to take care of the emergency care of people who have adverse reactions. Optometrists tend to link themselves in an arrogant way, in my experience, with dentistry, saying, well, look what the dentist can do. Why can't we do the same thing? Well, dentistry is, in reality, a medical specialty and grew up as a sister practice. And, of course, as many of you know, the first general anesthetic was administered by a dentist. Now, optometrist, what does it mean? Opto means referring to the eye. Metrist, one who measures the eye, measures the refractive power of the eye. So one who measures the eye for the prescription of eyeglasses or contact lenses is doing a splendid job, as the optometrists in this state are doing now. And there's no reason, in my opinion, why they should be allowed to practice medicine. I thank you for the privilege of appearing before you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be glad to field any questions that your committee could I might have.
Now, are cycloplegics diagnostic or therapeutic?
Well, they are therapeutic and diagnostic. They're diagnostic in their certain disturbances of the nervous system where the action of atropine, which is one example of those, of that type of drug, is useful in making a differential diagnosis. Atropine is also a therapeutic drug. Certain inflammations of the colored part of the eye, in your case blue or brown, as the case may be, requires the use of atropine to put the eye at rest. And then also the corticosteroids, which aren't involved here, are also used for the inflammations.
And midriatics, are they?
Midriatics just dilate the pupil. It gives you a greater view inside the eye.
Diagnostic,
yes, sir.
Pardon me, this is Anchorage. We are not hearing anything that the chair is saying.
Okay. Senator Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Milo, what about non-prescription drugs? Can someone, in fitting eyeglasses, give somebody mercuric oxide ointment for inflammation of the eyelid? How do you deal with non-prescription drugs?
Non-prescription drugs are what you can buy over the counter. So you can go into the drugstore and get Visine or any of the drugs that are advertised on TV and radio. It doesn't require writing a prescription.
But does the current law prohibit the administration of non-prescription drugs by opticians?
Opticians, you see, Senator Halpert, you get mixed up, and that's what the public does. And opticians, optometrists, ophthalmologists, and the whole business gets to be mixed up in people's minds. Any drug that is not required to be administered through a prescription is a non-prescription drug, and anybody can recommend them. An optometrist can say, your eyes are a little bit red or you're a little irritated after my work, go down and get yourself some Visine or Visine and use it in your eyes. There's no law against that. But mercuric oxide is one of the great allergens, and many is the time, in my own experience and the experience of others who deal with eye problems, where their eyes come in and their eyelids swollen shut because somebody prescribed a mercury compound, and mercury is very allergenic, causes reactions like that.
some adverse reactions to application on the eye that they may not be trained.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, the idea is that to diagnose disease and prescribe medication, whether to be used on the eyelids or dropped inside the eyelids on the eye, is the practice of medicine. And how anybody can be trained in a 200-hour crash course to do these things and be able to diagnose adverse reactions and above all take care of them. What are you going to do with a cardiac arrest or hallucinosis, which you can get from any drugs that you instill into the eye, especially among children? Just passes belief.
Are there further questions? Senator Victor Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, we have a proposed CS which is based on previous discussions. And I don't know if Dr. Fritz has had a chance to review the CS. Have you seen that?
I don't know which one you refer to, Senator.
You're referring to the bill prepared in 1983?
Right, the 51083 version. And principally, I'd be interested in your response to that CS, which essentially is a compromise between sort of extreme positions.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, as long as any drugs or medicines are used either by mouth or on the eye or on the eyelids, I am opposed to it on the ground that it's the practice of medicine.
Any prescription drug?
If a drug is available over the counter, such as antibiotics, would that be acceptable?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, it wouldn't matter whether it were acceptable to me or not because they can be purchased over the counter and anybody can do it.
What about diagnostic drugs? Are there any diagnostic drugs that you would feel an optometrist ought to be able to use without endangering the patient?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, my contention is that nobody who is not licensed, who does not have a license to practice medicine in the state, should use any drugs or any medications on the eyes or eyelids.
Dr. Fritz, let me be the devil's advocate. You say that the application of any kind of drug, at least not a prescription drug, is the practice of medicine by definition and should be limited to those who have their licenses through the Medical Practice Act. Correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. But Medical Practice Act definitions are only statutes. They can be changed. They could be amended. In other words, what I'm getting at is it seems to me arguably rigid in that as, hypothetically, the training of optometrists undergoes modification or they become more sophisticated if they are, or medical knowledge becomes more broadly disseminated, it might be argued that we should revise our definition medical practice to accommodate
changing times. Yes, I believe you should keep the horse well in front of the cart, change the Medical Practice Act, to let any renegade that wants to come in and practice medicine because he feels he's had a crash course in any portion of the human body that he's interested in, I'd be all for it. But as it stands now, I'm adamantly opposed to the practice of medicine by anyone that's not licensed to practice. Does not have a license, as I am, but having anybody plead before the bar who's not a graduate of a law school.
I won't go into that. We do to happen. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's go to. Dr. Rabeau, were you here to testify? Let's go to Anchorage then and hear from the first witness in Anchorage.
command a wide range of support and interest and has been conceived, lobbied, and financed by organized optometry in order to further its own goals. My reasons for opposing this legislation include the lack of any true need for optometrists to use medications in performing their jobs and the dramatic lack of didactic and clinical skills of optometrists in the field of medicine. Having actively opposed this legislation since its induction some 6 years ago, I cannot help but feel that this year it has gained unwarranted and undeserved momentum. House Bill 225, as written, lacks sufficient checks and balances to become an effective and safe law for people of the state of Alaska. The amended House Bill 225 also contains inconsistencies, ambiguities, and contradistinctions. Two most glaring deficiencies are that this legislation lists legend drugs in broad categories. I feel that if drugs are to be used, they should be identified by specific name, concentration, and drug schedule. Secondly, House Bill 225 allows the Board of Optometry and this board alone to decide what legend drugs are to be used and by whom. Regardless of how noble the intentions of the Board of Optometry are in deciding these matters, the practicality and the limitations of such a policy should be self-evident. In my opinion, Board of Optometry should answer to and seek approval on specific drugs from the Board of Pharmacy and Medicine. Since the amended bill lists only cyclopegic and vitriotic as in section 5, paragraph 8.7300, with paragraph 5 and 6 really do not apply. Again, I am opposed to this bill and feel it should not be passed in any form. If you do see fit to pass this, I urge you to modify in its present form significantly. I thank you for allowing me time again to testify before your committee. I hope you will review my correspondence and the references that I have sent to you all concerning this legislation. I want to offer my services to your committee on medical matters concerning this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Patterson. Are there questions, Dr. Patterson? I see none. Thank you for being with us. Is Dr. Morris Horning there, your name?
He's approaching the microphone. Good afternoon. I'm Morris Horning. I'm a physician. My specialty is rehabilitation medicine. I'm not an ophthalmologist. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Anchorage Medical Society. The concept of modifying the bill so that diagnostic drugs are included for optometrists has some merit, and working in that direction has been a job that the Anchorage Medical Society and the Alaska Medical Association has worked for a number of years. As you heard earlier, Dr. Fritz expressed very clearly a view opposed to optometrists using drugs at all
by name and in concentration, that for somebody to have a use of a wide range of drugs would be not in the public interest. As Dr. Fritz commented, the name optometrist refers to measuring vision, eye function, and so forth. And to do that, it's reasonable that one might use certain drugs of a diagnostic nature, and that makes some sense. But to use drugs beyond that, certainly therapeutic drugs, without a full understanding of the body function would be a real error. Many disorders in the body reflect themselves in eye dysfunction, and I think it's important that one understand total body functioning in order to have that, in order to have the insight necessary to diagnose and manage that kind of problem. I think there have been a lot of comments in the past, and I'll stop at that point and entertain any questions if I could. I would summarize again that I think this view really is an effort to try to look out for public interest without being restrictive to another field in the healthcare delivery area. I might make one final remark about that, in fact, not to add confusion to it, but over the years, other groups have done changes in their training curriculum, and with that have assumed a greater role in the practice of medicine. And that, of course, has not always been without some rocky points and not always cheerfully accepted by the medical community in a historical sense. But I think overall the medical community has been ready to recognize changing times and changing educational criteria, as we can see with the podiatrist, for example, who years ago had training that was relatively marginal, and over the years the training became very sophisticated, and now podiatrists with the appropriate training and background are welcomed as colleagues and often operate side by side. There are other examples perhaps in medicine also. And I think at this time we can say that optometry is beginning on that pathway, but is not yet to the point where a wide use of this type of medication, therapeutic medication, can be justified. At this point, use of the diagnostic seems appropriate, and probably years down the road, because curricula change slowly, perhaps 10 or 20 years, the curriculum will have changed sufficiently that it would be appropriate at that point to consider perhaps widening this restriction. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Are there questions? Dr. Wood. Senator Halford has a question, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doctor, I'm trying to recap your testimony in my own mind, and it started out opposed to the legislation, and ended with a statement that possibly the use of diagnostic drugs properly limited and delineated might be reasonable. Is that what you said?
Yes, I'm sorry to be confused. I think that there's perhaps an intuitive sense that many of us in the medical society would feel in agreement with Dr. Fritz. But you're right that our sense is that the use of the diagnostic medications is perhaps appropriate at this point, that going beyond that is going beyond the scope of training and so forth of the optometrist. But yes, we would be willing to support legislation with that compromise to use only the specified diagnostic drugs and the concentrations stated and so forth, but not to expand it to therapeutic medications.
Other questions, Dr. Boyle? If not, thank you for coming to the conference, Doc.
Thank you.
There are some witnesses in Fairbanks, and I believe that two witnesses have time constraints, so I will hear from them. I think that is Richard Parry and Christy Nielsen. That's correct information.
Thank you. Richard Parry is approaching the mic.
Good afternoon. My name is Richard Parry. I am a physician, and I am president of the Alaska State Medical Association, and I am speaking for our position, which is in reason for the council and the presence of Dr. Fritz. Our feeling is that legislation should address a pressing need in the state of Alaska. And here in Fairbanks, and I think you'll see in Anchorage and at the other teleconference sites, there does not appear to be a great number of people who are to testify for the need for their optometrists to provide even diagnostic drugs. Our feeling is that this is a classic example of self-aggrandizement by the optometrists and a very carefully concerted thrust by their lobbyists and by funding which they receive from outside the state to promote a bill in Alaska, because Alaska has been targeted by the optometrists in the states as one of the prime targets. I would like to answer two questions and address the compromise that we have tried to work out over the years. I have testified against this bill, or against bills similar to this, for roughly the past 5 years. And this year, as I find myself president of the Medical Association, I find this bill coming up again and again. First of all, there is a question of whether optometrists are trained, as they say they are, to handle the adverse reactions from the drugs. The courts, in cases of medical malpractice, have ruled very concisely that an ophthalmologist, that is an MD who treats eye lesions and is specialized to the eye, must have the prerequisite knowledge and the ability to open someone's chest if they have an anaphylactic reaction and be able to massage that heart in an attempt to resuscitate the patient. Failure to do this in the past has led to an adverse ruling on the courts in the malpractice case, and it is well established. I am not aware of any optometrist that has received any training at any time in opening someone's chest and doing open chest resuscitation and open cardiac massage. So I think there's a problem there. And the optometrists will be opening themselves up to some difficulties if they try to apply these medications. Our concern is that that even the mydriatics and the cycloplegics in certain individuals can cause anaphylactic reactions which can lead to the death of a patient. And simply mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and closed chest massage, which is taught in grammar schools and in high schools, is not considered to be sufficient medical treatment. In the past, I myself am a plastic and reconstructive surgeon. I've had 14 years of postgraduate training after college, not counting my practice in medicine, but in terms of my specialty. I feel that I'm not qualified to administer these drugs, and I don't feel that they need. I have no patients that come to me and ask me to administer these drugs because they cannot see an ophthalmologist. There are ophthalmologists scattered throughout the state, and there are also optometrists. One of the needs, or one of the reasons for this legislation has been stated that patients cannot see an ophthalmologist within a reasonable amount of time, and these, therefore the optometrists should be allowed to apply these medications for diagnosis because their patients do not have access to ophthalmologists. So this has not proven to be the case. The majority of optometrists are located in the cities and the population centers in the state, just like the ophthalmologists. There are a few that are scattered outside. I know there are some in Bethel. But they work under the direct auspices and control of physicians. And we have no problem with that because a person with a more advanced education assumes the responsibility for the patient and is there in case some problems arise. We in the Medical Association are tired of this bill coming up and up again each year. And I'm sure you down in the legislature are also having problems with this. It becomes very tiresome. I know you have other things that are of prime importance. And in response to that, I would like to draw your attention to a compromise that was arrived at in 1980 in Senator Coletta's office. And it was arrived at through a collaboration between the ophthalmologist and the optometrist. And if I may have your permission, I would like to read parts of it. But basically, it states that it is agreed by both parties that if a solution to this endeavor is to be reached, that a compromise position has to be made. That compromise is as follows. And there are several pages here, but I would like to read at least to use proparacaine 5%, 0.5% as a topical anesthetic for diagnostic purposes, or phenylephrine hydrochloride 2.5 to 5% for dilatation of the pupil for diagnostic purposes. Two, any change in this list of medications will be by the combined concurrence of the State Board of Optometry and the State Board of Medical Examiners. Part three, the training course will be completed by each optometrist desiring to use drugs prior to any examination. The course will consist of the following minimum subject matter: A, clinical pharmacology and drug-organ interactions; B, cardiopulmonary resuscitation and emergency training; C, techniques for clinical examination; and D, thorough review of clinical signs of fundus, anterior segment, and external disease, as well as referral guidelines. And part four, which I think is also important, optometrists shall take a written examination on the above given by a special test committee comprised of two optometrists and two ophthalmologists chosen by each respective professional organization to prove competence in the above subjects. The reason I read these, and our lobbyist Rick Urien will be happy to supply you with the compromise that was arrived at, the reason I mention this is because I'd like you to understand that we in the Medical Association are not adamantly against this bill simply because it gives more power to optometrists. We realize that this bill will keep coming up because of a desire by the optometrists to enlarge their turf. We would like to have a compromise which is reasonable, which puts a lid on this problem and defines very carefully controlled medication and a very carefully and precise method of testing that the people who are using these medications are well trained in their use and their application. And therefore, we have always supported, and we support once again, this compromise, which would allow the optometrist to use medications for diagnostic purposes, but only under very controlled conditions. And as was mentioned by the person who testified down in Anchorage, it specifically spells out the drugs and their concentrations. Thank you once again for allowing me to testify. If I can give any further information out, please feel free to contact
me. Thank you very much. Your testimony is that compromise was agreed to by the optometrist and the ophthalmologist of that day?
Yes, sir. It was a preliminary agreement between the Optometric Society, represented by, at that time, Roy Box and James N. Manson, and also the Alaska Association of Ophthalmologists was represented by Peter Canova, Sam McConkey, Robert Page, and Ron Tokar. And the lobbyists for both the Optometric and the Medical Association, State Medical Association, was there at that time, and the compromise was agreed to in Senator Coletta's office. It was never submitted as legislation or even as a compromise legislation because for reasons that are unclear to us, it was withdrawn by the optometrists, and once again, at the next session, the same old bill which you have before you was reintroduced. And it's been reintroduced in the past 3 to 5 years, as far as I can remember, and each time we have said that we are willing to accept the compromise, but it's never introduced as a compromise.
Thank you very much. Is Christy Nielsen there also?
Yes, she's approaching the mic. My name is Christy Nielsen, and I'm a pharmacist in Fairbanks, and I'm also on the Board of Pharmacy. I just want to state briefly that I am opposed to the passage of this legislation. I am, however, glad to see that the list of drugs has been greatly reduced from the House version that I saw in February. I feel at this point allowing optometrists to use medications as outlined in this bill doesn't serve any purpose for the people of the state of Alaska. And as a practicing pharmacist, if they should be allowed to write prescriptions, I don't feel very comfortable with that, partly because if I remember right, at the House committee that was looking at a version, they were talking about the educational requirements wouldn't be
proceed, Dr. Taylor, with your testimony.
Okay, my name is James Taylor. I'm an optometrist in Bethel. There are two optometrists here in Bethel, and I'd like to clear up some inaccuracies that have been presented in the earlier testimony by Dr. Fritz and Dr. Perry, who both seemed to feel that we were under the direct and immediate supervision of the physicians here in Bethel. That's not correct. We are under the supervision of the ophthalmology department in Anchorage, and they are available for phone consultations, as the case may be. But as far as consulting directly with a physician in Bethel every time we choose to use an medication on the eye, that's not done at all. As a matter of fact, it's more often case that the physician will consult with us because of our experience with the eyes and their relative inexperience, the general physicians who are here in Bethel.
Dr. Taylor, do you administer medications to the eyes now?
Yes, I do.
And under what authority do you do that?
Under the authority and standing orders of the ophthalmology department at the Nash Native Medical Center in Anchorage.
Is that because it's a federal facility?
They are supervising us because we're a part of I work at the Public Health Service Hospital, although I'm not employed by the Public Health Service.
Please go ahead, Doctor.
All I have to say right now. I'm open for any questions. I'm employed by the UConn Kuskokwim Health Corporation, which has many programs that work out of the Public Health Service Hospital here in Bethel.
I see no questions, but we appreciate your being here. Let's go back up then to Dillingham and see if Dr. James Picard is there.
Yes, my name is Jim Pickard. I am an optometrist as well. I have, for the last several years, worked within the structure of the Indian Health Service, and I am currently assigned to the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation. And because of the unique requirements of working in isolated areas, both on reservations in the lower 48 and in the bush here in Alaska, most Indian Health Service optometrists do have access to both diagnostic and therapeutic pharmaceuticals for treating their patients' needs. And in my experience, this has been a very efficient and invaluable service to the patient, who are many times separated by many miles and hours from other types of medical eye care. I also function here under standing orders, and the purpose of standing orders is not that I have to check with the chief medical officer or anyone else each time I wish to administer medication. The purpose of the standing orders is to define which medications may be administered at my discretion. And I think that especially for the more remote areas that this bill would be invaluable.
Well, Dr. Picard, if I, as a non-Indian, came out to Dillingham and wanted you to prescribe new eye glasses for me, you would not administer medications in my case. Is that right?
The transmission is breaking up quite a bit. If I understand your question, it was that if you came to Dillingham and needed eye medication, could I administer that to you? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, under the standing orders that I have and the organization of the clinic here, I could, in fact, do that if that was necessary for your well-being.
Even though I'm not a client of the Indian Health Service?
Even though you are not a beneficiary of the Indian Health Service, yes, that is correct because of the unique requirements here in the bush.
All right, well, let me put it this way. Suppose that my wife was in Dillingham and wanted her eyes tested by you, and I was in Anchorage and went to an optometrist, perhaps Philip Bach, in Anchorage. We both had our eyes checked for glasses on the same day. What kinds of benefits would she have being your patient in Dillingham that I would not have being Dr. Bach's patient in Anchorage that would be beneficial to her and detrimental to me?
situation that you point out, there probably wouldn't be any difference in that case. But if your wife were to be here in Dillingham and developed a conjunctivitis, an infection of the eye, or something that needed treatment, and could not get back to Anchorage or some other place where an ophthalmologist or a physician was available that was expert in administering a agent that would have curative powers for this infection that she had, then I could do that for her here, where Dr. Bach could not do that in Anchorage.
Well, in the Bush situations, at least in Dillingham and Bethel, it appears that the optometrists can be can administer medications to their patients in those rural communities. So no statutory change appears to be needed to solve the problem of that kind of patient in those towns. Are there rural communities where optometrists work but which are not affiliated with IHS or have or understanding orders?
That's a question that could possibly be directed to one of the other optometrists that is more familiar with the overall picture in Alaska. I have only recently arrived here, and I don't think I could give you an expert answer on that topic.
Thank you very much. Is Dr. Peter Kanava on hand in Soldotna?
He's approaching the mic.
Did you have a question, or did you want me to testify?
I just wished you to testify in your own way. If you have testimony, give us.
Thank you very much. My name is Peter Canova, and I'm a physician here in Soldotna. And I appreciate Dr. Perry alluding to the compromise piece of legislation, which was arrived at in 1980, because we spent countless hours with it. And at the end of that discussion, it was really felt that the optometrists could sell that piece of legislation to their constituents. And Dr. McConkie and I were very certain we could easily sell it to our constituents. And we were successful at doing it, but the optometrists could not, and thus that piece of legislation failed. And I think therein lies the difficulty in this whole process. If the optometrists were basically interested solely in using diagnostic medications, there would really be very little at issue throughout this whole business. But what is that issue is that this is really and truly foot in the door legislation. The optometrists not only want to treat eye diseases, but as one optometrist who is a consultant for the Public Health Service has recommended, they would like to be granted hospital privileges and would even like to be performing minor surgeries. And I think therein is the crux of the issue. Back to you, asking for broader and wider permission to do other functions which were typically the province of medicine. And I think this, from your standpoint, should be foremost in your mind. And that's all I wanted to do today. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Is Jeffrey Donison on hand at Anchorage?
He's approaching the microphone. This is Jeff Donison.
Please proceed if you have testimony.
Thank you very much. Senators, I'm an optometrist in Anchorage, and I was born and raised in Alaska. I've lived here all my life, 32 years. And I'd like to deviate from what I plan to say to rebut a few things I've heard. I think you guys are getting kind of a snow job from some of the physicians. When Milo Fritz talked about the practice of medicine, the way he defines it, obviously, a child's mother using an antibiotic ointment on a cut and bandaging it is practicing medicine, and this should stop. And also, Dr. Perry, president of the Med Society, mentioned some of these startling discrepancies in the curriculum between optometrists and physicians, and I'd like to point one out. The average hour, the median, let's see, let's put it this way exactly. The median hours of training in the eye for a physician in medical school is 15 hours. And that is a study done by the University of Washington Medical School. I'm sure you've heard of the University of Washington Medical School. As far as education goes, what we've presented is evidence and documented evidence to back up our statements. Most everything that I feel most everything Dr. Fritz said and Dr. Perry said just is not true at all, and I don't think they can back up any of their statements with any documented evidence. If you want to compare the hours in pharmacology training between physicians and optometrists, there's a study done. It's in your booklet, by the way, that we've given you at Indiana University of Bloomington. They show similar 120 hours are given to both optometrists and physicians in general basic pharmacology. And not only that, but for example, Dr. Fritz talking about a crash course in treatment. What they fail to understand is that the optometry program, just in itself, not including the crash course, it more than adequately trains optometrists for the type of things we're asking them to do. The only reason that the 200-hour course is added there, I might add that most other states, their hours are 20 to 60 in that range. We've put 200 in there just so that in good faith, we want to show that anyone who say, we haven't been doing this for a while, I've been out in practice now for going on 8 years, and I haven't been able to use the drug training I received, and so I'm more than willing to take, it's more of a refresher course than a crash training. If I can allude to basic science clock hours in optometry school, which by the way is 4 years after basic college, for example, at the optometry school in the booklet there at Southern College of Optometry in Tennessee, the basic science clock hours total 930. And at the University of Oregon Dental School, the basic science hours total 938. And if you just look at the college catalogs and the statistics, you'll see that optometry school in the last 20 years has become a profession side-by-side, dentistry, medicine, and optometry. And, you know, further proof of that, the doctor that testified about the changes in the curriculum that occurred with podiatrists, this started in optometry 20 years ago and has proceeded to the point where now approximately, I don't have the exact number, but approximately 42 of the 50 states in the United States now allow drug use of some form. The only states west of the Mississippi that I can't use drugs of some form in is Alaska and Hawaii. And other states, several of them now, have had these use of diagnostic pharmaceuticals, as they're called, for 10 to 15 years, and quite a few states are going into the therapeutic range now because of these changes in curriculum and in increased training of the optometrists. And one doctor mentioned that we study the eye, but not how the drugs affect the whole body. I'd say 70 to 80% of the training in drugs is how they do affect the whole body and the autonomic nervous system. And if you want to lay the facts on the table, nothing they say, they can back up with proof anywhere. And, you know, as far as care all over the state, I used to go and do clinics in Valdez. And it was a real problem there because if someone had a minor infection of the eye, and you got to understand what we're talking about here are not very complicated things. I have a choice of treating it illegally because I have the drugs, or I have a choice and taking care of the patient, or I have a choice of telling them to go buy the antibiotic over the counter. And you know, most of these drugs we're talking about, you can get over the counter, but they say on them not for use in the eye. Why do they say that? Because the exact same medicine is available prescription form only for use in the eye. Because they want someone, the basic understanding of Food Drug Administration wants a someone with the training to understand what to do with the drug. And we can definitely point that out, because as far as training goes, I got out of West High School here in 1969, and I hung up my shingle in 1977 with only one semester off. That's 8 years, ladies and gentlemen. And I use my family's funds, and I'm an Alaska Native. I use BIA funds, I use Coquimbo Native Association funds, I use State of Alaska Wichi money, and borrowed loans from State of Alaska, which I paid off early, by the way. And I got Alaska Native health career externship. I went to Kotzebue and Bethel and took care of people before they had their health aid. to not be able to use my training, and it's really quite unfortunate. I've had many of my patients call in public opinion messages, and it's the type of thing that a lot of the things you hear, like this one about outside funding from in optometry, that isn't true at all. We send funds to our national organizations so they can write a newsletter and so forth, and the funding that we have is to fly our people to Juno to testify is totally our own money. And another thing I want to say about Dr. Perry, one of my colleagues who's an MD, the building I'm an optometrist, and there's about 20 physicians in there. And one of them called me up, who, by the way, is my patient. I have several MDs for patients because they like what I do better, I think. And he called me down and said he got a letter from Dr. Perry saying that the optometrists have tried to take over medicine and we've got to block them. So you can see the kind of thing we're up against. And as far as open chest massage goes, that's kind of a laugh to me. I'd like to know if any ophthalmologist in the country has ever done open chest massage in his office after dropping a drug in the eye. I just don't think it's going to occur. Maybe it has, but I'd sure like to know about it. The only other thing I'd like to say is that this is not a new thing. Experience in other states has not shown drug use by optometrists to be any problem. For example, in the back of the booklet, the most striking one is the state of West Virginia. They've had the same bill that we've submitted in allowing therapeutic use. Theirs is a little more liberal. It doesn't require listing of any particular drugs, just that they're topical only, meaning only by drops or ointment. And West Virginia's had their law for over 8 years now, and they have 183 optometrists certified, and so far their statistics are they've used 74 drugs on 100,000 patients.